Mr. Wilkinson, reel 6. What was the desert like?
The desert was all right at the north, because there was different plants, and there was palms and things like this. But down when you went down more into the Sahara, when you went as far as Bir Hakeim, it was all sand and very little water. Few animals like jaguar and lizards, but used to carry them with you for fun, you know.
The jaguar?
Yeah, carry them. You know, it's just a mouse with a long tail and a broom and hair on the end. A funny thing, long legs at the back. We used to play with them, and they were quite tame.
Was it flat, the desert?
No, it's a bit weirdly where the sand is.
But where you were, you know, in your box and ahead of you.
In the box, it was...
And ahead of you, you know, towards the enemy lines.
Just little bumps and...
And presumably if you didn't have a wadi to hide in, you would get in a hollow of some kind too.
Yeah, you'd dig a trench. But there wasn't a lot went on with the patrols, actually. One case where the patrol got caught, but
not yours.
No. Yeah.
You mentioned to me that you'd took part in a major raid on Tamimi. What are your memories of that?
Well, you see that we did the patrols to see what there was going on around the airfield, and Robbo went on the airfield and he took a squad with them, and the idea was to bomb the blooming planes. It was a silly idea, really, but they gave us, or the lads, the yellow bombs with a tin plate on, and you had to take the plate off and hang them on the planes. You had to get on the planes first. And they were on fixed lines, so. And all the stuff, there was no huts. All the stuff was underground. The officers' mess for the Germans and things like that, and the barracks was all underground. And anyway, he got some on, and apparently he'd thrown some bombing Mills grenades in the officers' mess because he couldn't get the planes because the machine guns were stopping them.
So they've been spotted, had they?
Yeah. And they got on a bit, but they didn't get to do anything because the fixed line stopped them, the machine guns.
How far was that from your box, the airfield?
About 30, I think.
Miles.
40, yeah.
There was a major attack on the airfield, but to coincide with a convoy coming through to Malta.
The idea was, in the first place, that raid, if we'd knocked the planes down, they wouldn't get up. But that wasn't a success, for a lot of reasons, really. But the battalion put an attack forward, but it didn't go as far as the airfield. And anyway, we put this attack in, and fine sort of distance, and we got fairly close together. But anyway, some of our lads got knocked down, and anyway, there was two in particular that got under a mortar barrage, and Phipps. He was 21 that day, I think. So they said anyway. Phipps had half a head on. He was jigger. And Rowan had a wound in the groin. Now, I had the mortar back. And I went to the colonel. I says, there's a couple of lads, silly really. I says, there's a couple of lads down. I says, shall I fire a few shots? See if I can knock the mortar out. See, he says, "Oh no, because soldiers don't like mortars," decided them, you know. I don't like a lot of things. I don't like tank crusading either. But anyway, I said, well, I'll go and see if I can get them out. So I run in, and I got to them, and I saw Phipps had half a head, and I saw Rowan, and he was shouting because he'd badly wounded. So I picked Rowan up, put him on the shoulder, run, and as the bombs was coming down, they were just going, you know, normally if they're going over the top of the wine, or if they're falling short of the wine, but if they're going near you, but like everybody else, I hoid them down and picked them up, hoid them down, picked them up. And a sergeant came with my carrier, brought it forward, hoid them in the front, and we took them to the ambulance. And the ambulance was on a hill, and he says, I saw the doctor like, and he says, he's all right now. He says, we'll look after him now, just go back where you were. You've done pretty well. And anyway, I just carried on and did what was normal. Then when the convoy got through, apparently we went back into our box again.
When we got back in the box, I tried to get water or something to clean my uniform with because it was standing up. And I went through the company. Eventually, I got to the colonel. By this time, the colonel had changed, you know, it was Clark. Anyway, I went to him and I got in with him. And he says, I know what you want. He says, tell me what you want. But he says, unfortunately, water's short and we can't give you
water for the... We can't give you water to clean your uniform with. He says, but I'll tell you what I will do. He says, I'll give you a note for a four gallon of petrol to clean your uniform with. I wasn't very happy about that. And he says, and by the way, he says, I've got a recommendation here for the DCM for you. And I said something I shouldn't have said. I said, you can stuff your DCM, I want a new uniform. But I never got the DCM. New import.
Do you think that was because of the stress you'd gone through, that you were uptight, you might say, and you made this response?
Well, it'll be a bear.
So you never got your uniform washed in effect or changed in that way?
No, I had to use the petrol hat at all. I don't suppose you've ever used petrol, but it's not very good. It cleans, it takes the dirt off it, kills lice and stuff like that. But I thought, well, at least I had a clean set of gear. But as I say, it was my own fault. But he did say to me that I've got a recommendation for the DCM.
I think that you would have expected him still to put it through.
No.
Can we look at life in the box now? Because we've touched upon, keeping clean, for example. You said the water was always in very short supply. What kind of ration did you get?
Third of a pint a day.
And what you were expected to do with it?
That's to drink and keep you cool.
How did you manage to do all this with this small amount of water?
Well, we used to... I always had a pebble, and we used to suck a pebble. I've got it still, by the way, it's the only thing I have got.
And it was to make tea with, shave with?
Well, you didn't make tea. You couldn't afford to. You couldn't afford the...
To use it in that way?
No. Because you lost something in the and the making of the tea, you couldn't afford it.
How did water come to you? Or where was it coming from?
From Tobruk. There was a well at Tobruk, but what happened, I don't know who was the first to salt it. But we had put salt in, the Germans had put salt in, and it had gone like that. And it was salty water, but it should have been clear. But we had to drink salty water, not sea water, just out of a well. But they put cooking salt in. And they used to come with a wagon.
This was water wagon, the Bowser.
Yeah. And they used to come with that. And then you used to get your supplies.
Was the water stored in from transport?
40-gallon drums.
And were they effective? Drums, good drums?
Well, they were all right, yeah. But,
and presumably each day you got your ration?
That's it, you got a third of a pint a day.
Was some of your ration, not the third of a pint, but was some element in your ration taken for the cookhouse? Was that part of this?
Yeah. No, well, you see, a lot of the stuff that they cooked was out of tins, and they cooked it in whatever was in the tins. I mean, if it was potatoes in a tin, there was water with it, salty water, so you used to cook them in that. But you had to do that, otherwise you'd have had nothing to drink. But there wasn't a lot of cooking anyway. You were, a lot of the time you were on biscuits and bully beef. I didn't have a set meal as such. They just give you so many biscuits and stuff. A tin of bully for so many men.
Within the box, we're not talking about being out on your patrol, but when you were in the box, what was your, for want of a better word, what was your accommodation like? Where were you sleeping?
In a slip trench, in the sand, just a hole in the sand.
And you presumably being in S Company, you'd be round about the headquarters situation, were you? Round about town headquarters, were you?
No, we're spread out. You were with, certain of us were with companies, you see. But you'd be sent, Robo would send you to different places.
And this would be supporting men in the front,
right.
The infantry riflemen in the front. And they too would be in slip trenches.
Yeah. Well, you see, for your carrier, you'd dig a hole, drive the carrier in, and you could drive it out again. That's when you're on a fixed box, but when you're on the move, naturally you've just got to stay on the top.
How did you cope with the natural functions of life, toiletry? And
you just took Kaiser Speed with you, dug a hole and buried it.
I think one of the problems of the desert in the box was the very dark nights, and could easily not be able to go out and do this, but not so easily get back to your spot. Did you find this a problem?
No.
You were okay.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember anybody that ever was in a problem that way, because you didn't go beyond your box. I mean, you might just go a couple of yards away and from your trench. Dig a hole, do what was necessary, and then come back.
Did you collect your food on a morning that lasts you all day, or did you go and collect it for each meal and bring it back to you?
Well, in the main, we used to have our food, such as when we're on bully beef and biscuits. You could have a week's supply and just eat away, but it wasn't that... It wasn't meals as such.
How many was in a slit trench?
Well, you had individual trenches, and you had some people liked to be together. And it all depends. It hadn't to be too big. They were too big, they were too vulnerable.
Had they cover? Did you have anything over the top?
No.
Did you see much of the enemy air force whilst you were in the box? I mean, well, prior to the main attack.
There wasn't a lot, no. We saw them, Stukas, but they didn't bother us at all. In fact, even when he was attacking, when he attacked the boxers at Gazala, he came, attacked the South Africans first, and then he attacked us, and then he attacked the 69
along the line,
the 59 brigade, and that's the Greenhowers and East Yorks. And he attacked them. What happened was they sent the infantry first before the tanks, which is better for the tank people. That the leg is better that way. And anyway, the infantry come and they mowed them down. The Greenhowards and East Yorks mowed them down. So they retreated. And then the tanks came first. They got on top of the lads and on top of slip trenches, and they were grinding them, and they were turning and turning.
Could you see this happening?
No, I saw it. What happened after, I saw the effect of it. And you could hear them screaming. It's terrible. And but he ground them into the ground. The whole brigade was annihilated. 69.
And it created a gap there, didn't it?
It created a gap.
Can we, before we come to your own involvement in that overall action, we can just concentrate a little bit longer on the box. You said it was wired, minefield, and then of course your company's in certain positions. The heat of the day, was that pretty considerable?
No, well, you see, there was nothing to do if you weren't fighting. And you'd be in your slip trench. You'd even have a kip. But you were out of the sun when you were in your city. It was about a yard deep, you know. You used to dig them about a yard deep. And you could lie or you could sit in it or whatever. But you had to sort of keep shaded. Underneath, 6 inches underneath the sand is always cold. That's why we used to, when we got our ration of water, we used to bury it at least 6 inches underground and not drink it till night time. It was cold at night time. And the water kept cool on the sand. But other than that, it was.
Was there a marked contrast between the day temperature and the night temperature?
Yes, very cold at night.
And presumably then you got thicker and warmer clothes on?
Well, you just kept the same clothes on. But you see, during the day, not me, but other people, they could. Take the shirts off and have nothing, but I had to be covered because I was light skinned.
I was going to ask about that soldier who was in that situation, would burn very easily. And you kept yourselves covered. Was it an offence to get sunburned?
It was in a way, but it was. I don't think it was ever acted on. But you see, what I used to do, I used to cover the back of my neck, you see, and I used to keep my shirt on. I was never naked and or near naked. I always had my clothes on. I couldn't stand if I got the sun on my back. You see, I would burn so easily. So I used to keep covered.
Was it true that if you touched a vehicle and the you could be burnt because in the heat of the day
you'd fry an egg on it? Yeah, on a armored vehicle, you mean? Yeah. You could fry an egg on an armoured vehicle. You just break the egg onto a tank or whatever, and it would fry. No bother.
What was the problem with flies?
Terrible. More so if there'd been a battle there, been a trial attack or something like that, and there's some dead lying about. There's one at Alamein, for instance. We had to wear like a mesh curtain.
A veil,
yeah. And you had to put your stuff underneath and eat it underneath there. But we got, there was a lot of dead still lying, you see.
How bad was the fly problem? You mentioned about dead bodies around, but in the normal course of events in the box or in the desert, just how bad did it get? And did they?
Well, it wasn't as bad in the box.
Did they cover you? Did they crawl up you?
No. Well, there weren't. It wasn't so bad in the box for flies. As I say, even the excrement used to cover it up. But there were places where they were as thick as could be. I mean, you get a dead body and it's covered with maggots and covered with flies, and then even the cookhouse, you went in the cookhouse and you had to put this net over here to get inside, and they still got in.
But, did they have an effect upon anyone who got a scratch or a wound?
Well, you got a desert sore, yeah.
What was that like?
Well, you see, you get a scratch, all right. You get a cut, and it would go 2 or 3 days, it'd be septic, and then the maggots would be running in it. And one of our medical orderlies, he got just a scratch actually, and his hand was all maggots. You could scrape the maggots out. And he had to go to the hospital later. I don't know. He never came back, as far as I know. But Dix, they called him. I remember him. And,
so the thing, if you got a scratch, was to try and get it covered quickly.
Yeah. You had to do something with it immediately, because the scratch went, or even a bit of shrapnel wound. And within 3 or 4 days, you had maggots walking in it.
You've mentioned some of the little animals and creatures of the desert. Were any of those dangerous to the human being?
Well, you had snakes that were dangerous, but we didn't come across many of them. But we were sent out at one time in Iraq, actually, to collect the venom from the snakes. But the pythons was all right. They didn't. They were not harmful. They used to come in bed beside you, frightening you at night when you.
What was the overall health of the battalion like in the desert?
Well, we were all sort of young, and we could take things that we can't now. I mean, you went from one day from red hot to ice cold, within 4 inches of snow.
This overnight. This been the winter.
Overnight, yeah. But it's surprising how you got over those things.
You got used to living in the desert.
Yeah. But of course, when you first go in, it's a lot worse. I mean, it's surprising how the human body can suffer these things. But if you go in to a change like that in the first month of being in any place like that, then you feel it more. It takes you about a month to acclimatise. But firstly, you got used to it.
Was there a good side to desert life, looking back on it?
It wasn't a matter of good or bad to me. I was just there because I had to be there. I didn't particularly enjoy it. I knew places that I could have happily stayed.
Was mail coming through?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I got the first letter that came to the ninth terms in the Gazala box. And it was Dear John. But you know the title of
that. And that was for you. Mm-hmm. Was this from some girlfriend?
It went round the Durhams.
What effect did that have on you? I mean, you were so many thousands of miles away from...
Well, what she said, you see, I'd been caught in her. I was only a fairness, you know. And she was a bit older than me. I still see her, actually. And she wrote to me and she says it would be unfair for me to expect her to come be there when I come back home. So, and a few other things like, and anyway, she says she wasn't going to wait. She told us she wasn't going to wait. And I thought, well, she mightn't have to wait anyway. So, there hadn't a lot, at that time, a lot of letters hadn't come. So, I let anybody read it that wanted to read it.
So the effect upon you wasn't too bad?
No.
Presumably because you were so young anyway.
Yeah.
But it must have been pretty bad with some men, particularly married men who got those letters. Do you have any experience of seeing that happen?
Well, the effect didn't take effect in the line. When they were abroad, it didn't take effect. We had two lads that killed their wives.
When they came back home.
Yeah.
The padre must have been pretty active within the battalion in those circumstances. He's usually the man who you turn to.
He's the one that writes home, but I don't particularly like him as a padre either, so.
Yes, you were saying. Yeah. Did you ever get any... On an odd and rare occasion, did you get any supplies that arrived, you know, like tins of beer or bottle of beer or anything of that nature coming through into the box?
No, especially when Monty started, because Monty stopped all that. Mm. What we used to get nappy supplies.
And they came into the box?
Into the box, yes.
What would they be?
Nappy was at Tobruk when we were at Gazala. And there was also one at Mirza. But they used to come in, and rather strange, it seemed strange anyway. They would always come before we went into action. They would spend all of the money and lose it. Used to buy chocolate and all sorts. And then we'd go out in action with all this stuff, get knocked out and we'd lose it. But it always seemed to be when we were going to go in. To me, anyway.
I did hear that the Salvation Army appeared in the rear areas with their tea wagon. And
well,
did you recall this?
They were very good, the Salvation Army. I don't recall ever seeing them in the fighting area. But I do know that they existed because in Alex, they were the ones that cleaned the uniform. You see, because I was in a hell of a state when I got down.
Did you get leave from the box?
No.
You were there and you never got out?
No.
You didn't get up to the coast for any swimming or back
no.
to B echelon for...
No.
What about army baths? Did they come appear no. at any time?
No.
So you're pretty well fixed in there for the period of time you're in.
What you had to do, you used your shaving brush to bath with. It's a bath with a shaving brush. Use it all over your body. It wasn't very effective, but it...
Did people smell a little bit, obviously?
Oh, we smelled the tummy.
Petrol supplies for your vehicles, where were they coming from?
You could have any amount of that. You could have a mountain of that in 4 gallon tins.
Were they good tins? Some of them leaked, did they?
The burst, yeah. You see, they were only actually tin. About that high. Actually, what we used to, when we finished with the petrol, we used to put sand in and put petrol in and cook whatever you wanted to cook if you had the water to cook with. Or we'd warm ourselves at night if it was quiet. If there was no fighting, we'd cut a tin in half and put sand in and have a little fire.